This is Zartan, and you're listening to G.I. Joe Chronicles, which I don't like. It should be the Cobra Chronicles, but no.
The Lombax Crusade presents
G.I. Joe Chronicles.
Don't they realize they're dealing with Destro?
When I choose Ghostbusters, they're gonna scrape you off the walls with a squeak.
Now stop sputtering like a wet toaster and get busy!
Welcome to G.I. Joe Chronicles. I'm one of your commanders, Pat Sampson, codename DJ Christatos, and joining me always is my battle buddy in this operation. It is Jared Albrick, codename Death Probe.
At ease, DJ Christatos.
Yeah, I see you just got back from the mess hall.
Yeah, I just got...
what you been eating at the mess hall? What's down there?
I just ate a... Pat caught me eating as I came off of a mute there. I just ate a... Indulgent advance bar for people like us with the beatus.
Ah, okay. Sounds
now
good.
I have some sugar-free sweet tea.
I have to run down to the mess hall and get that right after we're done recording here.
Ah, that's for you, Delvin. All right. Okay, all you green shirts tuning in for this podcast, welcome back to Fort Longbox. We appreciate you taking the time to talk G.I. Joe comics with us as we chronicle our way through G.I. Joe Special Missions by Marvel on this episode. Next episode, we will return to our coverage of G.I. Joe America's Elite. But for this episode, we are back firmly in 1986 for G.I. Joe Special Missions. On this episode of G.I. Joe Chronicles, DJ Christatos and I are rotating in a special ops guest for the show. For this episode, it is Jason Albrich. Is that how that's pronounced? Albrich?
Albrich. It's spelled A-L-B-E-R-I-C-H, like Al B. Rich.
But it's not pronounced that way.
No.
Albrick. Okay, Albrick. I get it. Complicated. I'll get it eventually. Anyway, his code name is Weasel Skull. Welcome back to Fort Longbox.
Oh, it's great to be back. I love me all these missions, and I especially love the special missions. So I'm looking forward to this today.
All right. I have a question for you. Jason's been back so many times that we have to come up with different questions. But I have a question for Jason on this episode about his G.I. Joe history. I thought this would be fun. Because, like, I know for our friend Aaron Moss, who does the Real American Headcast, like, he admits, like, he's got a character that is everybody else kind of thinks is dumb, but he kind of loves, and I think it's Raptor for him, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we all have a character that's kind of, like, silly or maybe doesn't get as much love, but we love him. For me, I like Fast Draw with the two-rocket backpack thing. I thought he was a lot of fun. Yeah, so, Jason, who is your Joe or Cobra, maybe, that you thought... A little bit silly, doesn't get a lot of limelight, you know, but you kind of like them.
Silly, doesn't get a lot of limelight, but I kind of like them. I'm going to go with Cobra La, man.
The whole group? Cobra La La.
The whole group. They were just insane. It's like somebody was borrowing Orsted's mushrooms when they came up with that concept. It's one of those things where G.I. Joe to me, I kind of got off the train around series 3, right? When series 3 came out, that's kind of like when I got a little bit too old to be collecting. And by series 3, they were starting to get a little like, you know, they were really kind of scratching their heads and coming up with ideas. But some things come all the way around from so zany that you're just like, man, that's bonkers. And you can kind of open up a whole new world of sci-fi action. With those Cobra Law figures. And then they were really kind of prevalent in the movie, which I babysat this kid. And I got to admit, I kind of got into the movie a little bit. You know? So maybe it was the movie that was really kind of my indulgent because, you know, I couldn't tell my teenage buddies that like, I'm watching G.I. Joe with a 9-year-old kid, you know, that I'm babysitting all the time. So, yeah, I guess through that movie, Cobra Law.
I don't fault you. I mean, they made such interesting figures because they were so different. You know, you had Globulus, which had that long snake-like body. And then you had Nemesis Enforcer, which is everybody's favorite, right? And then did the girl get a figure? I don't know that she did. I remember like
I can't remember.
the foot soldier from Cobra Law did. I don't know if the girl.
I don't know if the girl did or if she, later on she did. Maybe.
Anyway, they were different enough that you're like, oh, they were eye catching. So I get it. Like, I think that was a jumping off point for a lot of people on G.I. Joe. That was the corner that some folks couldn't turn. I was young enough to make the turn, but I think people older than me, not so much, but they were visually interesting. And I'd be remiss if I didn't let Pat answer this too. Who's your B-team guy that you kind of like?
This is a tough one because there's so many different as I go through here and just thinking of all the different characters out there. Jason did take a good one. The Cobra Law people were odd and out there. You know, I kind of like Tunnel Rat.
Yeah, he's a cool character.
He got some.
I was going to say Tunnel Rat, but was he like?
He's been in some stuff. Yeah, been
a little bit. I would call him sort of, you know, B-level. Not, and I don't mean that's disparaging. He's just not like the typical, you know, Joes that we see. So yeah, Tunnel Rat was cool. He had a cool design.
He was really cool design.
Yeah,
cool weapon.
It helps too that when we were young, we were kids. Being a military family, Jason had, I think, specifically somewhere along the line, library sale or something, and picked up a book about tunnel warfare in Vietnam that we both read. And it's fascinating and terrible.
Tunnel of the Fuji, yep.
Yeah, it's terrible and fascinating, but so is all of war, really. But that gave an extra layer to me for Tunnel Rat, because I was like, I get it. You know, it's unenviable work. Well, now that we're all depressed, let's turn it over to DJ Cristalos. Pump it up, DJ Cristalos. We have an intelligence report to do.
All right. Well, for this intelligence report, we will be covering for this mission G.I. Joe Special Missions number 2, which was published by Marvel. It's got a cover date of December 1986. Writer was Larry Hama. Penciler was Herb Trimpe. Inker, Herb Trimpe. Colorist is Bob Sharon. Letterer was Bob Harris. Cover art goes to Mike Zeck.
Zeck, Zeck,
Zeck, Zeck, Zeck, Zeck, Zeck, Zeck, Zeck, Zeck, Zeck,
Zeck, and Dennis Jenke. Get that Jenke Zeck kind of vibe going on. And speaking about that cover, let's go ahead and get a cover description from Death Probe.
The standard 1980s G.I. Joe logo is smaller across the top, making room for the larger block letters. They're red with black highlights. It says Special Missions. Duke stands in the yellow corner box that reminds us that it is Marvel's 25th anniversary, 1986. So that means this is in no way depressing. That's Marvel's well past 50. How old are they now? I don't want to do the math.
I can't do the math either.
Anyways. The main action is intense. Roadblock, Rakondo, and Clutch are pinned down in a village, and the firefight is extreme, but the Joes are giving as much as they are getting, Pat.
Thank you, Jarrett, for that cover description. Let's go ahead and see what you guys think of the cover, and we'll go to Weasel Skull. What's your thoughts on the cover?
Well, this is one that I've got the issue of, and I love the cover. I'm looking at it right now. I'm a little upset because there's an ink spot on it. So it kind of ruined. Wait, that's not an ink spot. That's Mike Zeck's autograph.
What?
Flex. I'm flexing like Roadblock over here. Okay. So the cover is awesome. I mean, it's Zeck and Zeck at his best. We got our three in the special missions. We got a lean, mean fighting force of Rakondo, Roadblock, and Clutch. And I love the battle expressions on their face. Roadblock just, you could hear him yelling, just laying down fire. You see the smoke coming off his weapon. You can see the sandbags exploding in front of him as they're impacted by bullets. Rakondo, he's got a little fighting expression going on. And he's like, I don't know who's in that house, but they ain't coming out alive. Just laying their waste to it. And I really like Clutch leaning back on the sandbag, blasting away. You've got a background. You kind of got like that Jungle Village background. So it looks like you're sitting in the middle of the street with them. And then over it all, in that bright blood red G.I. Joe Special Missions it all comes together. I'm trying to keep it in here so I'm not tipping what I'm going to score this cover.
It's a 10. I knew it. As soon as he showed us the autograph, I knew what was going on here.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this is, again, a Zek cover. So there is a lot of detail that's going on in this thing. Just crazy detail, not only up front with the three main characters and the sandbags and all that's going on, but in the background, there is crazy detail all over there, you know, with this, the house, the fence, and just things exploding everywhere. Boom, boom, boom. This is just screaming action, and I want to get in on this. This is something special that you need to look at and check out on this one. And we talked about in the last episode, again, this is another one featuring Roadblock on the cover, right? He's got a little different outfit, you know, but I can, you know, I'll give him a break here. You know, they're in where they are in this one, so it's a little warmer weather. So he's dressing a little bit warmer with his, you know, the old tank top going on, and then how he looked in the previous America's Elite. But you can definitely see his style has changed. But still, it doesn't matter. He was cool back then, and he's cool now, and he's cool all the time. So definitely an enjoyable cover to look at. Jert, what's your thoughts?
This is that cover of the 80s, guys. Like, just like Jason said, it's special. So much energy on it, as Jason said. Jason, I don't remember if you complimented the steam coming off the rifle or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably, yeah.
Okay, because you rattled 50. Off a bunch of good stuff.
Man, I just pretty much reiterated everything you said on your cover description.
Yeah, like it's the sweat on Roadblock. Like, oh gosh, man. I guess I have to give it up to Janky because that's not an, I mean, we associate Beatty and Zek together. Beatty's a friend of the show and inked a ton of Zek covers. It's always weird to see it not be Beatty, but Janky did a good job, mm-hmm. especially I'll take the inker's point of view just to add something new that we haven't already said. Background building, you know, as the inker, you're like, you know, dang it, I got to get my ruler and you know, all that stuff. But if you look at it, he does some good, smart inker stuff, which is a lot lighter line work on the building up, which lets the thicker line work sit even heavier in the front to give it more of a perspective. So Janky did a good job. So yeah, very, very memorable cover of the 80s. And I think the score, which we will get to, much like many covers we've talked about, Pat, will be determined by how much of a fan you are of the characters on the cover.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I believe it should be. And speaking about the score, let's go ahead and get to our rating of this cover on a scale of 1 to 10 flight points. 1 meaning you didn't like it at all, and 10 meaning it's perfect and it should be a recruiting poster out of it. Jason, 1 to 10 flight points. How many are you laying down on this one?
I'm giving it the full 10. This is one that I would hang up on my wall, and definitely one which I have got autographed by the artist. So, and I do like all three of the characters that are on the cover. I know I think I might have said I would never give a 10 to anything that didn't have Stalker on it. So I might be breaking my rule here. Oh. But this one is worth breaking the rule. It is gorgeous. 10 for me. Yo,
Joe! That's a 10 for Jason. I am going to be just a little under it with a 9. I can definitely appreciate where you're coming from on this one. It is one of those iconic ones, again, that you notice because, you know, this is the second issue of Special Missions. Jason, you really mentioned it too, is Special Missions in red, and it's bigger than just G.I. Joe, Real American Hero on that top there. So it really means something. And I can just remember how excited I was when these were coming out. I was like, oh man, 2 Joes in 1 month. Oh man, I'm so excited for this. Oh, I couldn't wait to read these. And we'll get into the story a little bit more on this one too, and just the nostalgia, how I felt about that as well. But I'm at a 9. Jared, where are you going to be?
Oh, man. Unenviable spot here. I just got a text from Joe November, and he said I could do 9.5. That's all.
What? Wait a minute now.
Did you hear it? Oh, there it was again. There goes the text sound.
Now I want to see that text.
Yeah, I'm gonna text Joe right now and see what he says.
Oh man, you know what? I'm gonna end it at the 9 with you, Pat. Just because, like, if it had one of my more favorite Joes on it, like if it had a Beachhead, a Stalker, Snake Eyes, so on and so forth, it would hit 10 because it's that good. My favorite Joe of these. Let's play a fun game called "Who's Your Favorite Joes on the Cover." I would say I like Roadblock and then Rocondo and then Clutch. It's all very tight, though. I'll be honest.
Yeah,
these are all very good Joes. I don't know that Clutch is going to hit any. Is that an Uzi? I don't know if he's hitting anything with an Uzi. Yeah, they don't care at this point. This is suppressive.
Yeah, they're just laying down.
Anyways, if you guys feel like ranking the Joes, you can. But I'm going to be at a 9. Could have easily gone 10 if it had a superstar. You know, we all have various superstars. A superstar, according to Jared.
I like Clutch, Roadblock, Rocondo.
Yeah, I'm tossed between my heart for the, you know, an OG Joe, you know, I'm like, oh, Clutch, man, you know, he's been around for a long time. I'd go Roadblock, Clutch, Rocondo.
Each of us had a different lineup and I like them all.
Totally. Love them all. Definitely. All right. Well, with the cover rating all out of the way, let's go ahead and go to Death Probe for the story synopsis for our mission brief.
Of a hero and see the sacrifice within. There's no way out for the hero. He only lives to fight again. A hero stands tall, not for fortune or fame, but that freedom, because we all just want it the same. Real heroes don't give up.
This story tracks two different Joe teams, both working towards the same mission: rendering inert some extremely toxic nerve gas found on board of a World War II German bomber that's stuck in a rapidly crumbling glacier in Greenland. Team 1 consists of Alpine, Snowjob, Airtight, and Breaker. They're off to Greenland for the hands-on disposal of the gas, but they need some instruction from the former Nazi doctor who created the gas bomb, and he's in Brazil. Enter Team 2, which is made up of Clutch, Roadblock, Rocondo, and Dial Tone, who got left off the cover. Might have bumped it up for Pat, I know.
I would have.
It might have helped me, too. I like Dial Tone a lot. And that makes up the Jungle Team. And the Jungle Team has their hands full because not only do they have to get past the neo-Nazis protecting Air Doctor, but they also have to contend with an Israeli commando team that's looking for some payback of their own when it comes to the Doctor. And is Cobra going to show up on the glacier to make life as hard as possible for the Joes? Absolutely.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
All right, let's get into the highs and lows of this issue. Man, there's a lot going on. It's one of those Hama gets to do more grounded, historically interesting things. I know Jason's chomping at the bit to talk about it, so go!
Well, I think I'm going to start my high out with the structure of the story. I liked not just having the two teams with two distinct missions and two unique sets of skills, but even the background of the stories were opposites. You got one team that's in the jungle. You got another team that's up on an ice cliff. And so that made for very interesting flow to the story. No part got really bogged down or too in the weeds, and it kept the action moving. It was like a good TV movie or a movie. You could see that on the big screen. I like that style of it, and it allowed them to use the Joes in a way that made sense with their mission speciality. I think we all remember that Robot Chicken episode where the Joe team plays the prank on Snowjob, and he actually believes for a minute he's got a mission. They're like, no, man, there's never any Cobra in the Arctic.
It's a go job for Snowjob.
That's right. So for this one, you know, there's actually a job for him to do and for Airtight to do. So you get to see these Joes use their skills in unique ways. That's not just, you know, big shoot 'em ups with Cobra, although you get a little of that, too. So big points to me for the story structure. Really, really good storytelling here.
Over to you, Pat. And I wholeheartedly agree with Jason. A good balance of two climates, you know, literal and storytelling.
Definitely. I agree with that on the storytelling. The the two parts kind of combining, and they didn't spend too much time on one or the other. It was equal amount to tell the story that they needed to tell. And Jason kind of put in a little bit of it with the right people being the staff that were used, you know, the Joes that were used for their speciality. And what I like about Special Missions is Hama is bringing back some OG people, right? You have Clutch, an OG guy from way back then. He is in this mission. And you have Breaker, who's in this mission as well, too. So it makes sense. You need a comms guy on one team, and then you need Dial Tone, who's a comms guy on the other side. So it totally made sense. But it was really cool to see these two guys kind of keeping a spotlight. You know, in the story, Breaker actually does something. Even Snowchops are like, well, why'd you do that? Well, I was just trying to stop him from doing something, so he threw the grenade, but he still did something, you know. And it's just great to see these characters who I remember, you know, getting the figure and reading those earlier issues of these guys and just seeing them do something in a more meaningful. And this is more of the start of what we see when we're reading America's Elite, right? You see the start of a little more darker story, a little more adulty kind of a story going on. Adulty themes that are happening here in this one. And there's a lot to unpack in this, going back and reading it now with my adult mind on this one. So lots to say about the story writing that was done. And Jared, you mentioned it very well when you said you're giving Hama the keys to just go do what you want now. You know, you don't have to worry about placing toys or whatever in this. You do what you want and it's going to sell itself.
Yeah, and then like you said, we all kind of knew that Hama had some of his favorites. They're the Joes that permeate throughout his amazingly long run. Yeah. And Special Missions absolutely lets him, you know, take his favorites. And he's clearly thinking about it tactically, too, you know, like a military guy would. Yeah. I think Jason mentioned that. Yeah, the snow guys with Airtight makes a perfect combination for that mission. So on and so forth. Although I don't know that you have to have Clutch for your jungle mission, yeah, but you do from a storytelling point of view because he is Jewish. So yeah, it links the story really well. And we all know that Larry loves Clutch. I mean, he's clearly been fond of Clutch for a long time. And I like, how can you not like Clutch?
Yeah. Do you think that some of the characters that Larry did in that maybe reminds him of, you know, the stories that people that may have served with him,
I'd say it has to.
It would be something I'd kind of like to ask him, but you know, it's one of those questions I kind of want to ask, but I don't want to bring up.
That's fair. You never know how sensitive that might be, but I can tell you from my point of view, Pat, I've written two whole comic books, right? One's been published, the other one's coming out probably next year. And I put my military friends in there, and it's easy to do that. The speculation, and this is just kind of Joe, look at me, I've written some comics, but it's easy to write characters when you already have, you know how that, know character, that character is. Yeah. You know their voice because you go, I base that character off this guy that I know, so it's written in his voice. That's how I do it. Yeah. And I'd bet dollars of donuts that's how Larry does it.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably doesn't know anybody like Serpanto or anything, but you know, but for like a lot of those guys like Grunt and Clutch and Stalker, he knew those guys.
Right. That's why I'm thinking, like, definitely the original guys, those characters that were built, I'm sure they were just coming from his love and just his respect for the people that he did serve with and the military knowledge that Larry does have. And that's what makes this stuff that he did was just so special.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of special missions, this is where, you know, in the first one we covered, well, not the first one, which was 50, Special Missions number one, covered the very real, as we learned, story of the trapped submarine up in that area. It covered a defection storyline, very strong Cold War, fact-based. Now he's doing a World War II throwback. It's very fact-based that a lot of the German war criminals did escape into South America, into Brazil. Just like Larry tells it, the complicated levels that go on here, you know,
definitely layer upon layers of going,
you know, these are all things that he knows. He's a study of military history. And I really feel like this is something that's in Jason's wheelhouse and he'd probably prefer to talk about. So I'm going to pass it back to Jason.
Yeah, this is one of those comics, you know, that we need to be careful of a little bit on the show, because, I mean, it's particularly in today's political climate with the things happening going on, you could easily turn this into a political discussion. And we don't want to do that. But what we do want to do is pay respect to Larry. I think, like you said, that is kind of tying into real world events. At the time, Israeli government was still actively hunting down Nazi war criminals in the 80s. A lot of them, like Jared said, hiding out in South America and a lot in Brazil. We've got Clutch himself being Jewish and telling the story of his grandmother who survived the death camps. And then finally, we've got the, you know, sometimes gray area of international politics where the U.S. government's willing to make a deal with a Nazi war criminal in exchange for information that could save the lives of thousands of people. And even within the Joe team, there is dissent on that, levels of dissatisfaction. And Clutch, I think, is the team leader who has a personal connection and probably has the right to hate this doctor the most. Feels that tension between his orders and what he and the rest of his team feel are morally right. That's a theme that's weaved in this book. And it's a very adult, very complicated, very dramatic and technical story for a kid's book. I think that's why it really holds up to us as adults today.
Yeah, this is one of those books that I read as a kid, you know, and you usually expect, you know, kapow, kapow, let's get Destro, you know, and I read it as a kid. This was 86, so I was 10. I just turned 10, and this is the kind of book that made me ask questions to Jason or my dad and learned historically, okay, now why do people from Israel want to hunt this former Nazi guy, you know? Why is the Nazi guy hanging out in South America? You know, this is the kind of stuff that made me want to dig deeper and made me learn history, military history, political history, and all that kind of stuff. It made me laughable. So, oh, you learn history from a comic book. Well, there's real stuff in there. And he's being very genuine with it. And what a great storyteller to find a way to get Herr Doctor his comeuppance without the Joes necessarily having to be the ones to pull the trigger.
Yep, they did what they said they were going to do.
Yeah, they got exactly what they needed. And they're like, well, buddy, these are your people. Enjoy. Because the guy was so scummy. We didn't really cover this in the story, but the guy was so scummy, he was betraying anyone and everyone to make a quick buck. He betrayed the Nazis. And when they found that out, when his neo-Nazis found out that he betrayed them, it was just a matter of going, okay, well, thanks, buddy. We're going to leave you right where you wanted to be, you know?
We promised we'd protect you from these guys.
But not these guys.
And what's smart about that, too, is that the other team that was trying to find the doctor, they knew what was going on now too. You know, they were like, oh, these Joes are going to block us. Now they're like, okay, well, we can kind of work together as we have one mission, but once we get in, we're going to take him down. And then once they realized what Clutch was saying and doing, it's like, oh, okay. Again,
we're picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, definitely. Oh man, just a way of weaving a tale in this. Again, I can't say so much about this that it just feels so good to read it and to read it again with my adult eyes so I can really understand what Larry was trying to convey here. You know, I remember as a child, like Jared said, reading this. I was a little bit older than the Jared in 1986, but I remember the time. I remember, you know, what was happening wasn't too far away from where we were in 1986. So, you know, it's just, those were the memories, the history that I was learning as a kid that, you know, that I knew from history class and things that were going on. You know, this is mid 80s. So there's a lot of other war stuff going on and movies that are happening that bring you back to this time frame. So you can just set myself back in here, and man, just so much nostalgia for me on these. I have a lot of feels for these, not only for, you know, what Larry was doing, but for the history of it at all as well, too.
Yeah. And I mean, and you can cut this part out, Jared, if you think it's too political or whatever. I was listening to the news the other day and they did a survey and 20% of youth 19 to 29 don't believe that the Holocaust happened. And another 30% believe that if it did happen, it wasn't as bad as what is recorded. So I got to thank people like Larry who put these stories in books that made us ask those questions and learn.
Absolutely. I would keep that in. That's not divisive. It's a little sad, but, you know, it's lenses of perspective, man. It's everyone has their views on the world based off of what they've experienced, right? That's how you build your lens of I call them lenses of experience. Yeah. And so, yeah, I get it. The young people, to them, it's a video they watched on YouTube or something they saw in history class. And to guys like Jason and I who've lived in Germany and been to the concentration camps and got tours of the camps by people with numbers tattooed on their arms. And it's a different lens of experience, you know? So on the one hand, my immediate reaction as a grumpy old man is like, these stupid kids today, blah, blah, blah. They just don't know any better. They just need a more broader, more worldly education.
They need to read G.I. Joe Special Missions
number
issue two.
So yeah, not to get it too heavy, but I think that was worth discussing. I don't think we stepped on anybody's toes. So I think I made the point. We're not saying, oh, the young people are stupid. There's a difference between being stupid and just needing some more education. And I think that's what we're looking at here. But yeah, it's interesting too, Pat. You brought it up. This is 1986. And people think, oh, you know, the 80s, especially people like us, not so long ago, kind of a fun time, right? And then people go, well, World War II, that's so long ago. It's like the end of World War II and this book are like 40 years apart, which ain't that far. I mean, when this book came out, the guys who fought in World War II, most of those guys were still alive, the survivors, you know what I'm saying?
Yep, yeah.
Because got to put that time filter on it and go, man, that really wasn't that far removed from...
Yeah, they were our grandparents.
So, yeah, just again, I don't think we're out of bounds on this. I think it's a heavy discussion, but I think that's what Larry was able to bring in. Now, not all the special missions are going to be heavy like this, but he's done two in a row now that it's clear that he's got, when they gave him the green light to write these, he knew that these were coming. These are stories he wanted people to know about. And he's educating young people in a smart way, in an entertaining way, in a G.I. Joe way. And it worked just the way it should, in my opinion. Because remember what I said? I didn't say that Larry sat there and spoon-fed me, this is what you should think. He gave me just enough to ask questions and find out on my own. And that is excellent storytelling.
I think you did it in a great way when we talk about the two teams that are going on here. You have the heavier side, which is the team that is going for the doctor. And you have Clutch and the Israelis all talking about that. Then you have the action-y side, which is the team in the Arctic there, or the Greenland area, that are, you know, trying to stop this bad chemical warfare that could happen if this falls off of this glacier that's been moving for a long time. And I'm like, oh, a glacier in the opening where it says this is what a glacier is. It's a piece of object that's moving for a slow period of time. They're like, oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Again, brilliant storytelling, giving you the heavy along with the pew, 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 play with your G.I. Joes, you know?
Yep. Don't forget Firefly.
Good. I have no idea where we're going around.
Well, and I'm just going to keep going because...
Now I do. Now I remember.
That's where we're at.
I'm just going to keep going because even in this one, when you talk about Firefly... But you also have the his tank guy. Larry goes, again, a little darker on this one, that the guy's kind of sacrificing himself. He's like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep shooting for a little bit as I'm losing my grip off of this cliff that I'm hanging on, and I'm going to sacrifice myself and try to take out some Joes. He kind of does a little bit, you know?
That is one dedicated card.
Yeah. You don't really see a lot of that in the original series, right? There wasn't a lot of sacrifice or things like that going on, but in this one there is.
All right, what an amazing book to talk about. Heady, fun, and heavy, and still G.I. Joe. So, man, lots to think about as I hand this back to DJ Christados for the IG's report on the combat readiness of this issue.
And for those of you who don't speak military, that means we're going to score this issue story on the same 1 to 10 flag point scale we used earlier. With that, Jason, 1 to 10 flag points for the story, where will you be?
I'm going to be at a 9 on this one. I think that this was excellent, elite level storytelling. It was a good, tight script, had interesting, compelling storylines. We talked about diverse locations. We had two parallel stories that were happening, and I think flawlessly woven together. Only thing that prevents it from getting a 10 is, instead of Rikondo, that should have been Stalker in the jungle.
Yeah, you know, it's Rikondo. He's a jungle guy now. You got to have the jungle guy in there. Jared, 1 to 10 flag points for this story.
I would have preferred to have Morris Day, but jungle love.
Jungle love. I want to know ya.
Know ya. I didn't predict when we got into special missions that it would be, I knew it was a little more mature, but not this much more mature. It goes back to what I said earlier. I have to appreciate that Larry didn't say, this is what you should think, but he said, This is what's going on. He gave me enough information to go, okay, well, let me look into this. And I just have to applaud a storyteller who does that, who says, I'm going to entertain you and I'm going to put some thoughts in your head to go do what you're going to do with it. You know, my favorite TV show of all time is Quantum Leap. And every episode almost is like that, where they just tell you a really good story. And Star Trek does that a lot, too. They tell you a really good story. They plant some seeds and go, you know, maybe think on that. And I just miss that kind of storytelling, that sort of light touch storytelling. I just pulled Jason. That's my long winded way of saying I'm giving this a 10. Yo, Joe! What a thought provoking, but not beating you over the head issue of a silly military comic book that had a good message.
All right. Well, with that, I am going to be with Jason on a 9 on this one. I think it was a really done well in the storytelling, the art, great as well, too.
Herb Trimpe, it's so cool to see him back on the book with Larry.
Yeah, it's just so neat to go back to these. How many years, you know, boy, we can't add it up. I'm so old, I can't even count that. How old it is, but
Laurel will fix it in post.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see and just to go back with these with the story rating out of the way. Let's go ahead and find out who will get either a Silver Star medal or a Silver Snake. This is where each of us will get to award a character in this issue who went above and beyond or below and sneaky in their call of duty to do what they needed to do. Jason, who's getting your silver medal?
Well, you mentioned him in your comments. Silver Snake posthumously goes to Cobra Hiss driver. My man drove off the cliff, held on to the cliff, was falling off the cliff. I said, you know, before I die, I'm going to take some Joes with me. And he went out in a way that, yes, he earned that Silver Snake Award. May he rest in peace. I think he's still falling and hasn't hit the bottom of that chasm.
That is a good one. That's definitely a good one. Jarrett, who are you giving your silver award to?
I was really looking at that. It's Tank Driver.
Were you?
I'm not going to lie. I was like, man, he made a big sacrifice there, but as a guy who's taught leadership and emotional intelligence, I have to give it up to Clutch for being emotionally intelligent and mature and not letting his emotions dictate his actions. And that allowed him at the end to get the satisfactory ending that he liked, but keep himself and his team clean. Yeah, he played the cards just right. So I'm going to go with Clutch.
Not a bad one. That's definitely one that I would have chosen as well. I'm not sure if I would have chose Jason's snake to.
That's dedication, man.
I wish I had that level of dedication with my staff at work.
It is. I want to give it to two people. I'm going to give it to Rikondo and I'm going to give it to Roblox because I don't know did Ricando know that Robach was going to knock him out so that he can sneak away later on? Or did it just work out that way? And he's not mad at Robach for bringing him, you know.
Robach.
Or maybe, maybe even Robach just didn't, you know, just kind of gave him a nice, you know, a little tap on it. But I got to give it to Ricando for playing this part of possum in order to then sneak away and do what he needed to do and, you know, securing.
Boy, he did do some like cool snake eyesy things though, didn't he?
Yeah,
he did.
He did, yeah, you know, bust through that window. It's like, oh, you're sneaking around and then you Kool-Aid man through the window. You know someone's going to hear you.
That's what I thought. It's like we were all sneaky, sneaky up until that point. Yeah, and then you busted just through the window.
And then the guy's like, oh, yeah, I've been waiting for you to come busting through my window. Well, yeah, why did you just bust through that window like that? Crazy, but cool. Crazy, but cool. All right, well, now that we've gotten our ratings out of the way, let's go ahead and head on over to Jarrett's segment where he opens up his toy chest and tell us what's in it. What's in Death Pro's toy chest?
It's here, the G.I. Joe collection, each sold separately. G.I. Joe from Hasbro.
All right, Pat, in my toy chest this time around, of course I'm going to take someone or something that's featured in this issue and give you a brief toy history on it. And in this issue, I've selected Air Tight. Air Tight is a hostile environment specialist. His real name is Kurt Schnur, which is fun to say, Kurt Schnur. His name is Kurt Schnur. He is a specialist in ordnance and CBR warfare. I would like to hear Pat's guess at what CBR stands for before Jason tells him what CBR stands for.
Chemical?
Yes.
Breathable?
Nope.
Rad? I don't know.
Close. Jason?
Radiation?
Chemical, biological, yeah, and radiological.
Good, Pat. You came pretty close. Not bad for a guy who hasn't dipped into this before. Kirchner, which is still fun to say, he's from New Haven, Connecticut. He appeared in Series 4 in 1985 and was discontinued in 1987. He came with black air hoses, a black sniffer. That's right. It's not a gun. It's a sniffer. A green compressor pack and a black hose. And
I always thought that sniffer was like a vacuum, like to suck up the.
Oh, you know what? I probably did too.
When I was a kid, I was like, "Oh man, where does that get stored? Does that?"
It's more of a sniffer instead of a storage unit, I guess say. There are currently four versions of 3¾-inch Airtight, and it's now time to ask: did you have it, Pat? Did you have Airtight?
No, I did not have Airtight.
Sad story. Jason, did we have
it? I think we did. I'm pretty sure we did because I remember we used to play with him on the battle platform. If I remember.
That's how I recalled as well. Again, I feel like he was a trade secondary. I don't know if I bought him new, possibly a shed acquisition for you.
I don't think. I mean, it's not one that I would buy new.
Yeah, it wouldn't be one that I off of the shelf. I wouldn't be. I wasn't like, oh, I got to get Airtight. You know, that's a cool one.
No, I wanted more like Spirit Iron Knife and those kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, it's kind of cool to get a specialist like that, you know. So yeah, I liked him. I thought he stood out. His design was pretty cool. And yeah, that's Airtight, ladies and gentlemen. I think the big takeaway from this is not a gun. And it's not a big vacuum storage thing. It's more of a sniffer, just to let you
see,
know.
I didn't know that. So I learned something.
I didn't either.
I thought it was a gun. I'm like, why does that gun look weird?
So basically, he just carries that around, and it checks to see if there's anything bad in the air, and then if so, take it from there. But
okay.
Anyway, I feel personally bad for Airtight, and I know Jason does too. I've spent at most at one time maybe 6 hours in Chem Warfare, full Chem Warfare suit get up, and at just 6 hours, I was done with that. I was like, I'd rather die. It's so uncomfortable, especially in a hot climate. It's ridiculous. So
you're dripping sweat at the end of that. I had to do the obstacle course in four.
Brutal. Like I can remember taking off there's boots you put on over your boots. There's like these rubber boots to go over the boots.
Sure.
I can remember guys taking those off and pouring sweat out of it because that's how bad you sweat. As I took my training in it in North Carolina in the summer, which was hot enough. And then when do you actually wear it? Well, if you're like Jason, in the Middle East. It's like, come on, man.
Like I said, after a couple hours, I'm like, you know what? I'll just whatever gas, I'll take it. I don't care anymore. So anyways, that is airtight. God bless you, sir. You're doing the Lord's work. That is it on Airtight. Kind of a cool toy.
All right. Well, now that we've talked about Death Pearl's toy chest, let's go ahead and get into combat comms.
Call it G.I. Joe. Go get Breaker. He can do it.
As always, we want to start off combat comms with our roster of our Battle-Hardened Crusader Club veterans. These are the fine folks that have joined our Crusaders Club. They enjoy early access to special long box video episodes, free raffle giveaways, voting on show programming, and so much more. These are the folks reaping the benefits and giving some much appreciated support to the show.
And Helica Wolf.
Oh. Auburn Elvis.
Bill Bear.
Blasted or Stash It.
Braxton Underwood.
Clinton Robinson.
Captain Entropy.
Clark Westfield.
Dave Collins.
Battle Wagon.
Ezra Gallo.
Gary V.
Gene Hendricks.
Gerald Green.
Heinz K.
Jason Keen, who I thought was going to be originally on this, but turned out we got the wrong Jason.
Or did we?
Or maybe it was Jason Lady.
Jeremy L.
Jim. German. I hope you like Jim German too.
Our very own battle buddy, Jim Meal.
And Joe Thomas.
John Watson.
Josh Strickland.
Candace Ward.
Kathy Bright, the MVP.
Matt and Lissy Passo.
Mark Ross.
Maxwell Traver.
Miranda W.
B.D. Devins.
Paul Hicks.
Rick from Jeff and Rick Present.
Rob Morgan.
Samantha Maney.
Sean Urbanski.
Spidey 67.
Jared, hand me those spreadsheets.
Spreadsheet.
Steve Cronin.
Tim Price.
Tony Pennington.
And now, with swivel arm and battle grip, Toronto Cuff.
If we missed anybody on our list, we do apologize. Please keep in mind that we recorded these episodes well in advance of release. So if you are a recent addition, we should be adding you soon. But until then, don't worry about it. Relax, fella. Take a load off. Just let us know that we missed you by sending an email to contact@longboxcrusade.com, and I will personally get it all squared away because I get those emails and I would love to hear from you. Whether we miss you or you just miss us, we want to hear from you. You can do that by sending an email to contact@longboxcrusade.com and we will get it all straightened out. So you might be asking yourself, how do I become a Crusaders Club member? You know, it's simple. Just head on over to patreon.com, search for Longbox Crusade, and for as little as $1 a month, you can get all the access to the amazing world of the Crusader Club. So go. What are you waiting for? Come check us out. Head on over to patreon.com. You'll thank us later. As a reminder, you can also call and leave a voicemail at 707-532-5269. That number again is 707-532-LBOX.
Pick up the phone, over.
I got you 5x5, over.
Read you loud and clear. In the charm.
And that will bring us to Mission Complete status for this episode of G.I. Joe Chronicles. If you'd like to hear more from us in the realm of comic books, action films, vintage TV, movie serials, and more, check out the entire Longbox Crusade Network. DJ Christados, where can they find that?
Well, Jared, I'm glad you asked. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and most of your podcasters out there. It's on everywhere. So go find us or go to www.longboxcrusade.com. We're also on X, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at YouTube, all at Longbox Crusade. Go find us, subscribe to us, like us, do whatever you do on those platforms. Back to you, Jared.
If you'd like to chat with us online personally, we can be found at Becky Pat.
Oh, I can be found at Christatos01 on the X. Jason, where can you be found at?
You can find me at Jason Albrick on Threads and on Instagram.
And of course, you can find me at Yard Sale Artist on X and Facebook and Instagram. You can check out my artwares at www.theyardsaleartist.com. Thank you guys for joining us for this episode of G.I. Joe Chronicles. We will see you on the battlefield next episode, where we will return to our coverage of the 2006 Devil's Due series, G.I. Joe, America's Elite, Gangster Bang. Yep, that's the name of the next issue. What? Gangster Bang.
What?
I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll see you guys on the next
one. Until then. Audiences only.
Until then. Platoon Fallout.
Yo, yo, Joe. Joe.
The music themes for this show are done by musical genius Joe November. Please check out his SoundCloud at joseflin99. That's J-O-S-E-F-L-I-N-99. You will not regret it.